It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Farad. You may have heard of the zebra mussel, an invasive species from Eastern Europe causing havoc on freshwater ecosystems around the U.S.
But in the Great Lakes, a much bigger, if less well-known problem is the quagga mussel, a close relative of the zebra mussel that came here on ballast water from the same part of the world.
They've disrupted the food chain at every level, resulting in a massive reduction in key fish populations, including whitefish, which has a long tradition of fishing in the Great Lakes. And their numbers are counted not in the millions, billions, or even trillions.
There's quadrillions of quagga mussels in the Great Lakes. In a week's time, every gallon of water in Lake Michigan could have passed through a mussel.
Two Canadian filmmakers became fascinated with this tiny, extremely destructive force and how these quagga mussels have completely reshaped the Great Lakes in a way that hasn't happened since the Ice Age.
Zach Melnick and Yvonne Drabert are the co-founders of Inspired Planet Productions. Their new documentary film series is All Too Clear, Beneath the Surface of the Great Lakes. Yvonne and Zach, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having us, Rob.
Now, Yvonne, this particular invasive species, the quagga mussel, what is it that captured your interest to want to make this documentary about it and the havoc it's caused in ecosystems in the Great Lakes?
Yeah, for sure. So if we went in a boat, I would say anywhere on Lake Michigan, we went out to 100 feet, put our robot down to see what's down there, it's going to be covered in quagga mussels. But in our Georgian Bay, which is akin to your Green Bay, there are like no whitefish left. And that's the most important commercial species on the Great Lakes. And it's a species that's, you know, been important to the commercial fishery for years and years, but also to our indigenous friends and indigenous communities. And that, in a roundabout way, kind of led us back to the quagga mussel, which is really changing how our Great Lakes work and the ability of the things that live in those lakes to survive and thrive.
And Zach, one of the most striking things about the documentary is, okay, you've got the quagga mussel, didn't exist really in the Great Lakes before the 1980s. Now there are quadrillions of them. Can you paint us a picture of what we're looking at on the floors in so many places in the Great Lakes?
Well, when we first started looking into this story, we didn't know, you know, if it would be possible to really communicate what's happening out there. But there's been this tremendous advancement in underwater drones for filmmakers. So we were able to use this technology and go down to really the deepest parts of the lakes. And we can capture images in extremely low light, basically like moonlight if you're on above the surface of the water. So we can film these vast, endless vistas, really, that are just nothing but mussels. And even the science folks had never really seen that before because their cameras just weren't good enough. So we were able to really show people how fundamentally the lake floor of the Great Lakes has been transformed, and it's now just sort of endless seas of these little invasive mussels.
Now, Yvonne, there's an irony, and it's right there in the title of the documentary, All Too Clear. You might look at a lake that's been affected by quagga mussels and see this clear, blue, transparent water. And that's bad, though. It looks really good, but it's bad news. Talk about the connection between the mussels, that clarity of the lake, and the harm it can do.
Yeah, so our lakes today are about three times clearer than they were before the mussels came in. That's 30 years. They've gotten three times clearer. And that's because mussels are filter feeders. They're constantly sucking things out of the water, and they're eating little tiny aquatic plants. And so those are called phytoplankton. And when we've got quadrillions of mussels, that's 13 zeros. That's how many mussels are in our Great Lakes. Doing all that feeding, they're actually removing all the food that the little zooplankton, so the little critters, would like to eat. And of course, when you don't have those little critters, you don't have little fish. And when you don't have little fish, you don't have big fish that we as humans like to eat. And so that's why we're seeing these really big changes. And there's, in fact, so many mussels in Lake Michigan, for instance, that about once a week, all of the water in Lake Michigan is filtered through a mussel.
And Zach, talk a little bit more, please, about the whitefish, a beloved fish in the Great Lakes region. What have we seen in their numbers, in their life cycles, thanks to the quagga mussels?
In certain areas, it's been quite devastating. A lot of the small-scale commercial fishers just can't make a living anymore. And it's really sad. And so that really drew us to try to tell this story, but we wanted to bring the whitefish to life, right? I mean, that was a huge part of what we were trying to do, because while it's an important species, you know, we haven't really seen them, have a picture of them as a wildlife, as a creature in nature, if we sort of close our eyes and imagine it. So we were really wanted to use the underwater drone technology to sort of take us into the world of the lake whitefish and film as much of their life cycle as we could. So we captured what we think is the first known documentation of whitefish spawning as a species ever. And so we were able to use the underwater drone to sort of follow with a group of fish and get them used to us over 1 hour, 2 hours. And then they start to really do their normal fishy stuff.
And Yvonne, one really difficult point here with the mussels there is that the whitefish babies, the fry, the young, the smallest ones, that's really where the life cycle is affected, right? By those nutrients that are getting hoovered up by these quadrillions of quagga mussels. That seems like the real point where whitefish populations are being hit. Did I take that away properly from your documentary?
Yeah, you got it. And so when whitefish just don't seem to be growing up, when they're little babies, they need to eat those little zooplankton. And if mussels are eating all the plants that are around that the zooplankton are eating, we're not going to have as many zooplankton. And we've seen that throughout the lower Great Lakes. There used to be this little tiny shrimp called the diaparaya, and that used to be everywhere in the Great Lakes and one of the main food sources for fish like whitefish. But now there's only a few places left in the Great Lakes where those guys even exist. It's really been a whole ecosystem change caused by these mussels, and really points back to how invasive species can change even more than we ever thought possible.
In addition to looking at the impact on fish, you've touched on this a little, the impact on people. I want to give a listen. You talked to the Henriksen family here in Wisconsin, making a living fishing in Lake Michigan off of Door County for decades. This is the voice of Charlie Henriksen, president of Henriksen Fisheries.
There used to be 6 or 8 boats here all the time. We used to catch millions of pounds of fish. It's all just disappeared.
And Zach, this is a story you hear from people fishing in different parts of the ocean, commercial fishing, tribal groups fishing, a lot of places where in living memory you could make a living fishing, and now in many places you can't, right?
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, we were drawn to the human part of the story initially, and then we just really thought about, you know, how can we get people to care about these creatures that we sort of share our lakes with, and that's what drew us into this sort of wildlife filmmaking part of it, when we realized that we could show people these fishers in the U.S. and Canada struggling, and it's not their fault. And that's, we got to be pretty clear about this. Usually when you hear about fish stocks collapsing, you know, they blame the fishers. And often, you know, that's true, right? We as humans are really good at taking too much stuff from the environment. But in this case, you know, from all that we've seen and learned and heard from the science folks, that's not the case. The fishers are not to blame here. They have been sustainably doing this activity for hundreds of years, you know, it's these environmental changes that are causing the decline of this species.
We're talking to Zach Melnick and Yvonne Trabert about the new documentary series All Too Clear, about the destruction of Great Lakes ecosystems by invasive quagga mussels, quadrillions of them throughout the Great Lakes. Yvonne, a lot of the focus, especially of the second installment in the series, is on the search for solutions and fixes, including research scientists, indigenous groups, fishing groups. Who do you point to as some of the most hopeful signs, the people trying to find solutions here?
Well, actually, one of the most hopeful stories we followed was right in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, with Professor Harvey Bootsma from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Science. He's one of the people that is out there every day doing everything he can to try to figure out how we can manage these mussels to help our native species make it through this really tough time. There's a really awesome project that we follow between the Sioux Tribe, from northern Michigan, and they're trying to put whitefish eggs back in rivers, trying to get whitefish to spawn in rivers again. And that's something that whitefish used to do historically before we put dams and did a whole bunch of logging on rivers and polluted them. And there's actually a really hopeful story right in Wisconsin, the Fox River. Whitefish are coming up the Fox River again and spawning in the Fox River. There's been some amazing work done on the Fox River to help restore that river. And we're really seeing dividends. The one place in the lower Great Lakes where whitefish are doing well is Green Bay. And so that's kind of a point of hope for everyone. There's a few places where whitefish are doing all right, and we just need to help them, you know, jumpstart those populations elsewhere and get them through this really tough time.
Zach, another solution I saw in the documentary, people actually pouring new reefs in certain places offshore. Now, we're not talking about coral reefs like in the oceans, but rock reefs that different kinds of fish need to lay their eggs. Can you talk about that as a possible, at least partial solution for some of these fish species?
Sure. So, as you pointed out, they're not the same as reefs in the ocean. These are piles of rocks that for some reason the fish are sort of attracted to go and lay their eggs. And so there has been a lot of work done to restore spawning habitats, and it works really well. There is a lot more life there than just a random spot in the lake for sure. And in fact, we, at the end of All Too Clear, we go out of the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee on the Nisgay, the only research boat that's capable of working in the winter. And we go out to one of these offshore reefs, and there were a lot of whitefish there. And so that's super cool. That shows how resilient that these fish are, that they can still surprise us and be in places where we don't expect them to be. And those remote offshore reef systems, they feel a lot like being at an ocean reef. You know, there's just so much life there, and it's just so cool to be down there swimming with them.
Yvonne, we've been focusing on whitefish. There's a weird kind of counter story here about lake trout who were in trouble in part because of previous waves of invasive species. They're coming back, and one notion is that maybe this newer invasive species, quagga mussels, might somehow be helping them.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Whenever you have an invasive species, you're going to have winners and you're going to have losers. And it looks like lake trout might be one of the winners here. Lake trout like to eat a non-native fish called the alewife, what we call a prey fish, which means it's a little fish that bigger fish like to eat. Now, with the mussels, the alewife are collapsing, so we're not seeing as many of those alewife. And so, of course, lake trout aren't eating as many, which is actually a good thing, because when lake trout eat alewife, they ingest a little enzyme that makes it hard for them to reproduce. So it means they're not really having babies that are going to survive. So without those alewife, our lake trout, the fish that actually belong here, they're doing better now. So there is some hope there. It's kind of a funny story to think about. And if you watch the third episode of our series, we call it a silver lining, because we kind of look at all those fish and all those stories that are a little bit of a win.
And Zach, that all points toward the complexity of the ecosystems we're talking about that have had years of their natural functioning, pollution from various sources, and then wave after wave of invasive species often brought in the ballast of boats. How challenging was it for the scientists you talked to try to puzzle out causes and effects, given all those things being muddled up together?
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to really keep up in a lot of ways. Like, there's just so many things that are changing. But the resiliency of some of these species that have been here for thousands of years, like the lake whitefish. The whitefish is a fish that's designed to eat bugs off the lake bottom, okay? But now they've adapted to eat round goby, which is another invasive species, and it really points to just how resilient and plastic these creatures are if we kind of give them just a little bit of space to do their fishy things.
Now, pulling back the lens a little bit, Yvonne, one thing I took away from your documentary is you two really love the Great Lakes. Can you talk about that a little?
I mean, we live on the Bruce Peninsula, as I say, and if I look out my window right now, I can see Lake Huron. And what's not to love there? Endless water that's clean and ready to drink, and we can swim and scuba dive and paddle in. I mean, we have a pretty amazing gift from the universe right here. You know, Africa has the Sahara, you know, we've got, you know, the ice in the Arctic, but we here in North America, we've got the Great Lakes, and it's something that we really do need to treasure and protect the best we can. And if we can show people what's down there, maybe they'll start caring about it a little bit more and put a little more thought into how our Great Lakes are going to evolve into the future.
We'll leave it there. Yvonne, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
And Zach, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Yvonne Draybert and Zach Melnick are the founders of Inspired Planet Productions. They talked to us about their new documentary series, All Too Clear, Beneath the Surface of the Great Lakes. Last week, we asked you about your favorite indoor things to do when it gets real cold outside.
Tanya from Madison writes, go to the tropics. Enjoy the Olbrich Botanical Gardens Indoor Conservatory, where it is warm and humid. And if you don't live near Madison, Tanya says to check out for inside spaces in botanical gardens near where you live.
And speaking of steamy settings, Marian Wauwatosa heard our conversation about Finnish saunas. Mary's Finnish cousin confirms our sauna pronunciation. And Mary says, not having access to a local sauna, I purchased a higher dose blanket that's like a sauna blanket for use in my apartment and use it regularly every week for health benefits, finishing up with a minute's worth of cold in the shower.
Keep sharing your cold weather favorites. The steamier, the better, perhaps. Email WisconsinToday at WPR.org.
Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at WPR.org/WisconsinToday. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to WPR News.